Hi. Did you know that you can watch Last Podcast on the Left and Side Stories on our Patreon right now?
Yes, that's patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. But over on TikTok, you can see the hottest, tightest, funniest clips from the show right there.
It's TikTok.
TikTok. It's at LP on the Left. It's the same as our Instagram. You already follow the Instagram. Why don't you go follow TikTok?
But it's on TikTok.
Yeah, because seeing is believing.
Yep.
So just go check it out. Watch it.
Go send our podcast to China.
I love TikTok. The crocodile is my favorite TikTok.
That's the only one he knows.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Dun, 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 dun. You know you got a hernia when your belly grows a tail. You gotta make that tail go back and forth so everybody knows you're well. You got your hernia, little bump. You gotta push inside your gut. And then everybody knows you got one extra lump for the sluts.
Wow. Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left, yep. Ladies and gentlemen. That was entirely improvised tune.
No way.
Yeah, Henry Zebrowski, he didn't work. I mean, you might think he spent all night working on that.
A lot of people come at me and ask me all the time, where does it come from? How do you do it? And it's I have six writers. And each day we sit and we hash back and forth. And just that alone went through about 3 weeks of work.
That's nice.
That's beautiful.
I'm Marcus Parks, and I'm here with Ed Larson.
Hello!
And today, this is a relaxed fit.
This is a relaxed fit.
This is definitely a relaxed fit.
Relaxed.
Very much so.
But today, we're going to be talking about a specific case. We're going to be talking about something that we've been obsessed with for a while now. The second season of the show about the subject just came out. We're going to be talking about the curious case of Natalia Grace.
Yes, and I already did my apology. I said it once, and I'll say it again. First off, because I was interested in the story of Natalia Grace simply from the angle that the orphan movie was real.
Yeah, well, that was the conceit.
Yes,
because to be fair, that's exactly how it was framed in the news before the full documentary came out. It was framed in the news as a little person,
evil orphan, evil orphan terrorizes. Yeah. Precious mother.
Yes. I read the Daily Mail.
Yeah. It was framed as an evil orphan had come to America posing as a child and had terrorized a family, had terrorized
sent
a
by
mother.
Anti-Zelensky forces from inside of the Ukraine in order to destabilize Ukrainian support from within America.
Yeah, and that this person had terrorized these two people, one of whom was a mother who had written a book called The Spark about raising an autistic son, raising him to be a genius.
Yes. And she did it.
Yeah, and she did
she
it. And
did
that
it.
Was her conceit, that she did it. And there was, all of a sudden in their life, this crazy adult posing as a child that was bringing knives in their room and threatening to kill them and all that. And
had purposely sprouted bush hair.
Yes.
As a tactic, like a skunk does.
You could do it. You think really hard and you press your hands together. You go, yeah!
Boink, boink, boink.
But none of that was true.
No.
As we now know, it was a child the whole time.
Very much so.
Very much so, a child.
Proof is in the pudding of that.
So you love pudding. The pubic hair. All right. Can we talk?
It was a lie.
We'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
It also, I've had back hair since I was 10.
Yeah.
So I had back hair before I had pubic hair.
Really?
I had chest hair before I had pubic hair.
How can you tell if you have back hair before pubic hair?
Well, I couldn't see my pubes at the time because I was fairly round. But I could tell from the back hair because my mom said, oh, good, you're like your Uncle Kevin. He was virile. She always told me back hair was a sign of virility.
I guess so.
Yeah, look at me now.
Yep, all these children.
Look at it. I just keep late-term aborting them.
So should we start with maybe going through the characters? in this case.
Absolutely.
Going through all the people. So the main character here is Natalia Grace. She was born in the Ukraine in 2003.
We think, but we're around, but definitely around 2003.
The documents that they received from the Ukraine say that she was born in 2003. But, you know, it's within, you know, let's say plus or minus a year.
Man, the footage of that Ukrainian orphanage, it was frightening
where she came from.
Dude, it looked like an MK Ultra site.
Ukrainian, like, and Russian former Soviet states, their orphanages have an absolutely horrific reputation.
That's slander. I can't fucking even think. What?
No, these places are horror shows. They've been horror shows forever, you know, and they're basically, a lot of them are set up to drain as much money from America as they possibly can.
I think there's other ways to do that. Start a proxy war.
Not fun. And the Ukraine, like, we all have a soft spot for them now.
Of course.
Back in 2003, incredibly corrupt.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on. It's a hard area to be in, especially, it seems, as a child. In their version of the system, like the foster system, because Natalia Grace, with the stories that she talks about within that Ukrainian orphanage, like the idea that in order to get all the kids in the Ukraine, in that orphanage to go to sleep at night, they had a man, you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
Dress up in a goblin mask and a suit. This is what she, according to Natalia Grace, and I actually, it kind of tracks, that he would chase them to sleep, which is like, it doesn't make a good attitude. Like, can you be haunted to sleep each night? And either become Angelina Jolie.
Uh-huh.
Or Wednesday Addams, but real.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess that's kind of what ended up kind of happening to Talia Grace.
But I don't know about her memories because she came to the United States at a very young age. She was two or three when she came to the United States. And she was adopted by this family called the Ciccone's.
Yes, the Ciccone families, which also, because then she was named Natalia Lord Ciccone, which is Madonna's child's name as well.
Well, Madonna's
the Ciccone's.
Yeah, Madonna's real last name is Ciccone. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Madonna Ciccone. I don't know if Madonna is her actual real first name, but her last name is Ciccone.
I would imagine Madonna's not her real name.
It might be like Lauren.
Yeah.
I think actually it might be.
But the Ciccone's had her for 2 years. And, you know, Natalia Grace, she was born.
That is her real name, her legal name.
Yeah, that is a real, she was born with a rare form of dwarfism, so she requires a lot of medical attention. A lot of medical attention. It's a very expensive child to have.
Yeah.
And so the Ciccone's...
Specialty shoes. You need to have stuff set up in your house so they can reach things.
Surgeries.
A lot of surgery.
Surgery constantly, yeah.
Yes.
3,200 people have this in the world, they said?
Yeah.
Damn.
It's very, very rare. But what the Ciccone's did is that they started basically shopping Natalia around to other little people families.
Yeah, well, because the idea of, like, maybe the people that understand the syndrome or like what the what she deals with, like, would probably help to have a couple, to having an actual dwarf family raise you, because they know what to look for and they know how to help.
Yes, but it also came with a price tag, it seems. And it always, the Ciccone's are a very mysterious people in this story because nobody has ever actually talked to them. They're very secretive. They're very reclusive. They're very litigious.
Yeah, they don't want to be involved in the story, which I mean, it's hard because they did what they felt was right by Natalia. And, you know, I don't know what else you're supposed to do about that.
But they knew they couldn't properly take care of her. You would think,
yeah. But eventually, after passing over, like, two different little people couples, the Ciccone's settled on Michael and Christine Barnett. Now, Michael Barnett, how would you describe Michael Barnett?
He's a weenie.
He is one of the, I talked about this on Side Stories, and he obviously, he makes for good television.
He does.
If you watch the actual series.
Animated.
Yeah. But Michael Barnett is an absolute weasel.
Yeah.
I would put him towards, he's like an evil pain butler. to Christina Barnett, to Christine Barnett. He was a very strange man, flair for the dramatic.
Very much so.
Is a he's obsessed with himself, loves Alice in Chains. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best parts about him. Yeah. Loved his little car. He pulls up in his little car.
Always has a convertible of some sort.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's Fred. There's nothing wrong with that. And then he definitely looks like Fred Durst now on tour. Because you see how Fred Durst is doing the old man thing.
Uh-huh.
But he is a shameless fame goblin.
Yeah.
That is now the center. He centered himself into the story.
He's a narcissist, first of all. I mean, he's absolutely a narcissist.
Absolutely.
And possibly on the spectrum.
Horribly dressed.
Always.
And throughout the show, I watched 7 episodes in the course of like 10 hours.
Yeah.
So I'm like half broken right now.
Yeah. Well,
but it's like, it seems like he slowly got worse dressed throughout. I know he has less money as time goes on. He was never dressed well. The first interview, that tie, come on, kill him.
Yeah. I think that he's supposed to be, he's looking relatable. I think that's what he's doing. I think he's trying to show, but like, I'm a regular guy. When he did the act out of the first, when he was in that first season, when he is on the ground, I mean, like, punching, I can't say ground. Anything. Yeah, I'm like that.
Right. Right.
That's how I speak.
Yes.
So a lot of times I'm watching him being like, that's quite the storyteller right there. And I know it's because I'm watching. It's like how I use my hands.
Histrionic is the way that I would absolutely describe this man.
Yeah.
And so Michael Barnett is married to Christine Barnett. And Christine Barnett is 100%. I mean, from what I can tell from the documentary series, from, you know, and from what she said and blah, 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 so on and so forth, sociopath. I'm an absolute sociopathic personality.
She is a handful. That is for certain. Also, in terms of just look, that ice blonde, like she's got the thing. She looks like kind of otherworldly. She looks like what's her name from the Golden Compass.
Oh, okay.
Cate Blanchett, kind of like that style, like with like Ice Queen, whatever it is. Or was it from X-Men?
Oh, Emma Frost?
Yes. Yeah, she kind of looks like Emma Frost.
That's that a dime store Emma Frost. Sure.
I got like Brett Butler if she was a robot.
Yeah. Regret Butler.
Yeah, we have Emma Frost at home. That's who she is.
But she wrote this book, The Spark, because they have these other, their other son.
Their biological son.
Their biological son.
One of the three.
Is the one that was featured on the documentary series. He was a child prodigy that was like, you know, he broke all these records.
He gave his own TED talk.
Yeah.
You know, I heard stories where, you know, he would take like popsicle sticks and toothpicks and he would build like the interstate. Like he would build like Indianapolis. He would build the interstate.
Wow.
He knew all the names of the streets. Like he's an absolute genius.
Yes.
Like an incredible proven genius.
And as it seems, which I've heard a lot about prodigies, it's like that idea of like when they try to move on past their prodigy stage, it's very detrimental to their mental health, because a lot of times that accelerated intellect seems to sometimes affect a social ability. Like it affects somebody bring you in, especially if you're, they talk about with kids that get put ahead in class, you know, like how like they, it kind of fucks up their social network a little bit and kind of fucks them up later on. I don't know if you've met anybody, and I love them, but it's like, you know, how many times you've met someone, I remember in school, had went from homeschooling to came to public school.
Oh, it's a tough
transition. And it's a hard transition because they come in and they're used to mom and dad being their social network, or they're used to, and so they're kind of like, kind of act like an alien. And I feel like in that way, he suffered from that, where he got to the point where like, now you're not a child anymore. Where's the adult prodigy part? And the pressure seems to make people kind of fold in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Christine wrote a book about raising this guy. His name is Jacob. Wrote a book about raising him called The Spark, in which she takes a lot of credit for his genius.
Yes.
Takes a lot of credit for basically saying, if it wasn't for me and my superior skills, this child would not be the genius that he is. And it's successful. I mean, this book was well known. There was a 60 Minutes segment on Jacob Barnett. I mean, this woman gave talks. The book was it sold very, very well. So this woman was a known figure in, I guess, the parenting community. I don't know exactly what you'd call it.
Oh, according to here, Jacob Barnett is full on getting his doctorate right now.
That's incredible. Great.
Yeah, he's working hard. Becoming a theoretical physicist sounds difficult.
Yeah, Jacob Barnett also, you know, he was also abused as a child.
In the show, I would say he's the only likable character.
I'd
say so.
I feel poor. But then also I feel bad for Natalia Grace because of what she went through in this process of being blamed.
Well, the story of Natalia Grace is, I think, completely wrapped up in this documentary series. Because so far there have been two seasons. The documentary aired on ID Discovery, six episodes each, season one, season two. And the documentary itself kind of became a part of the Natalia Grace story.
Yes.
Especially how they framed it. Because I would say that this documentary series is unethical, to say the very least.
It's very exploitive.
Very exploitative in a lot of different ways and towards a lot of people in the case. Towards Jacob, towards Natalia.
I am thankful that Natalia actually gets to tell her story.
In the second season, she gives a rebuttal. But in the first season, the documentary filmmakers kind of like they frame it as like, maybe she's an adult.
Yeah.
Maybe she's not. Maybe she's a sexual predator. Maybe she's not. When they knew the entire time that she was a child.
I was multiple episodes in when I still thought that she might be a little demon.
Yes. That's how they set it up. And they set it up for narrative interest. But, you know, it doesn't really serve. Like, you have to wait a whole season to find out that they knew for a fact that she was a child the entire fucking time. And that's the big key here, is that where did it start? So Christine Barnett, the Barnetts adopt Natalia Grace.
Yeah. And in 2010, they adopted her.
She arrives at their home, and it sounds like...
Well, they picked her up in Florida.
Little
People of America or something were the ones that, like, sold her, kind of?
I'm not sure about that. Yeah.
Okay. I'm still piecing together the documentary here.
If we get a couple of facts wrong, you know, forgive us.
SideSourceLPOTL@gmail.com because we're just kind of talking about this story.
Because I will say, like, I know that there are people who feel very, very strongly about this case.
And I'm one.
And I get it. But I'm also going to say that this case is extraordinarily messy.
It's messy.
Very complicated. Everybody's got a different story as to what happened. And that's also on top of the fact that, you know, a lot of people depend on Natalia Grace herself as far as how things happen. But you also have to remember that she's working from a child's memory. Like, she's talking about things that happened to her when she was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
She was literally forced to become an adult. She was, by the time she was 9, she was definitely forced to become an adult because the courts did it.
Yeah.
But then later on, like, before that, she really, she had a very tough life.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is that it's also the memories of a person who has absolutely, without a doubt, 100% been sexually abused at one point in her life.
And thoroughly traumatized.
And thoroughly
across the board.
Yeah. And thoroughly, and physically abused, mentally abused.
It's not
emotionally
good.
Abused. Every kind of abuse you could think of, she went through.
So Barnett's, They adopted Natalia. She arrived. Our read on the situation is that we think that Christine Barnett was looking for material for her next book.
Of course.
You know, like, because technically that's also backed up by Michael Barnett, who believes that Christine was like, had openly said this, that this was a book that she was a new content. Basically the idea of like, kid flipper. I can get a kid in there. Any kid. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I can flip them. I can make it into, I can make them a success story.
Yeah, I can take a child with a very rare genetic disease and with a lot of challenges, and I can make them a genius because I made my other son, who has, you know, who has his own issues. I made him a genius, so I can make anybody a genius. It's the big sequel.
Yes, and obviously this is conjecture, but it does seem to track.
Well, $600,000 on the first book advance, right?
Yes.
And then Lord knows how much that successful book made after that. So we're talking probably $1 million. She's looking at another meal ticket. Yeah. This is all my opinion.
These are all opinions.
And that's not even counting like talks that she could give, appearances, all the ancillary income you get from this shit.
Yes. And so it seems that Natalia arrived, and I think number one, her physical issues were apparent and they were not prepared.
No.
And then she came, and all of a sudden, like, because what she needed was a lot of care. She needed a lot of surgeries. She needed, again, the prosthetic shoes. I believe the prosthetic shoes cost like $3,000. It's like, this is big money. Yeah. And she also showed up truly, desperately traumatized.
Yeah.
Maybe with, and sometimes in that, it kind of prefers in a way, like, she showed up not ready to be the prodigy that Christine wanted her to be.
Not at all.
And then realized that I can't flip this kid. What do? I got to get rid of this kid.
Yeah. And about a year before, a little movie called The Orphan had been released.
Which is a great movie. And I still wish it was real. Because that's fun as hell.
But, and so, like, it's... It's speculated that Christine saw...
Oh, I know an orphan.
Saw the movie and thought, we'll just do that. We'll just prove that this little girl is an actual adult. And then once we prove that she's an adult, we can just kind of get rid of her. We can push her aside. We can get her out of here.
Well, they tried a couple of things. At first, it was trying to show that she was a danger.
Yeah.
So... she started reporting that she was attacking people in the neighborhood, and then she was attacking her fellow kids, and then she was attacking people at school. We now know that Natalia's teacher came out and said that Christine Barnett had made a report that Natalia was ramming kids with her wheelchair and being a wheeled terror inside of her classrooms. But Natalia's teacher basically said that didn't happen. Natalia's adopted mother, Christine Barnett, was like, she's a monster. We're trying to maybe get her into sort of like an asylum like situation.
Well, I mean, there was so many, you know, things leading up to that, to the asylum type situation, where it was, you know, her, them saying that she would show up in the middle of the night at the foot of her of their bed with a knife, saying, "I'm going to kill you."
They try to throw the other kids into traffic.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Like, yeah, trying to lure them out to traffic, like grabbing their toys and throwing them out in traffic, trying to lure them out into traffic,
and then sexually getting involved with her husband. She floated this idea that Natalia was seducing Michael.
Well, that was a very interesting thing, because she was also, at the time, she was messaging and in contact with a little person country singer named Freddie Gill.
This guy's a fun character.
He's a fun character. He goes by the name of Two-Foot Fred. Mm-hmm. He got famous by being in the first Big and Rich hit, the first Big and Rich video, Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. He's another Indiana guy, and he claims that he was in contact with Christine, because Christine got a hold of him and said, like, hey, I'm having troubles, you know, with raising a little person. I'm having the issues. I'm having challenges. Like, maybe I can ask you for your advice. And as time went on, you know, Christine is very fond of sending sexually explicit images of herself to people.
Yes. She's very fond of that. And so she started to try to seduce him, kind of.
So she started sending these sexually explicit images to Freddie Gill. And then she started saying, I think that Natalia is sleeping with one of the neighbors. She's an adult. I think she's sleeping with one of the neighbors. Then she said, like, I think that Michael is sleeping with Natalia. And then this woman, Christine, knowing full well that this is a child, tried setting up Natalia with Freddie Gill.
Yeah.
And even started taking pictures, like putting Natalia in full adult makeup to make her look older.
Yeah.
Taking pictures and asking Freddie, it's like, so do you think maybe you'd want to like spend a night with Natalia? Like, there's so much weird shit.
Yeah.
And that's just what we know about.
Because Christine Barnett obviously has refused to talk about this with anybody. She has not gone on the record. Because
probably a smart thing.
Yeah, for her. Yeah. But so this starts, she's trying to ramp this up. Natalia is obviously in a lot of pain. Now, coming out, we keep saying we know for a fact that she's a child. And how we know for a fact that she's a child is that in season two of this documentary series, they released that they had went and they had taken her to a dentist to go, like, because they were trying to figure out how to age her. For a while, like, there was a discrepancy about how old she was, because according to them, the Barnetts, because, like, anything that comes out of their mouth, you really can't trust unfortunately. But they basically said they all, you know, the paperwork was inconclusive. And like this one said a different year and this other one said a different year. And so they went.
She could have like an older face.
Not now when you look at it. This is probably a bad comparison, but when we adopted Wendy, when Wendy came, we were told that Wendy was 4.
Yeah.
Right. But then you realize when you look back on pictures of Wendy, she obviously was younger because now she's grown in size, right? And her face grew, right? Natalia is very much not an adult when you look at her as and when they had her.
Well, it all depends. And that's the thing. That's why the fucking documentary is so shitty, is because the documentary purposefully chooses pictures in, you know, the lead up, you know, in the first season
from later on.
And they purposely choose like pictures, videos that in which you could be like, okay, I could see that.
I could see the
confusion there. I can see why somebody would be, you know, questioning that. But then there's one picture, like to speaking to Henry's point, there is one picture in particular in which she is smiling and her mouth is full of baby teeth.
For certain.
Obviously, baby, like she's missing a couple of teeth. You know, these obviously are baby teeth. And they go to the dentist and the dentist is like, yeah, this is a kid. I would say she's 9 years old.
Yes. They believe that she would age her somewhere between 8 and 9. They looked at they literally just looked at the fact that she had baby teeth still coming in. Yeah. And there's the proof. That's it. Technically,
a dated X-ray.
The documentary series could have just ended. That was like the entire big reveal, which is we know for a fact that they knew that she was a child and they didn't do anything about it. But then they continued to go ahead. And so this is, I feel like also one of the most interesting parts of this case is that we talk about all the time about magical thinking and like the power of words and like all this kind of thing, what happens in perception. Think about how magical it is that you could go into a room and a man in a cloak, right, with a big old scary book and a quill can look at you and go like, you say you're 9? Not anymore. You're 22. And legally, you are. And now you are this fucking, you are this age forever.
Yeah.
And they can't seem to undo it. The re-aging was like, that's like the kind of like this weird, crazy sort of like very unique crime.
Well, here's
in
what
the center of this.
Well, here's what happened with that is the Barnetts, they keep going to doctor after doctor until they finally find one that says like, oh, yeah, this is probably an adult.
Yeah, and because they said that they tried to blame it on the pubic hair.
Yeah.
They said that she had pubic hair too young.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. That was the story that they told, was that when they adopted her in Florida, they went out for a day at Disney World. You know, the whole family went out for a day at Disney World, and they took Natalia back to the hotel with the whole family.
All-Star Sports, most likely.
Yeah, probably. That's a good one for the kids. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They took Natalia and the whole family back to the hotel room. You know, Christine like undresses her to give her a bath, as you would for a 6-year-old kid, and Michael hears a scream from the bathroom, and Christine says, "Get in here!" And as Michael puts it, "I went into the room. I went into the room, and I looked out, and I saw that she had pubic hair.
There was for certain." Pubic hair. This is the motion. It's this. I knew. I've been working on my Michael. I've been trying to figure out how to play Michael.
He's a very distinctive.
It's so hard without you seeing me because it's all the him smashing his face and him like rolling and writhing and stuff and then being like, no.
I tried. Yeah,
he's a coward who was also a bad man.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. No, he's an absolute coward because he claims that in all of this, he is victim too. He claims that he was fully passive and fully submissive, and that he was under the spell of Christine, just like everybody else in the family was, and he could never break free from Christine.
Well, he closed up his story. From the first time he was talking, the first interview he did, he said everything.
Yeah.
He said all of the stuff that he was directly involved in, and it wasn't until later, probably after season 1 came in, and someone probably sent him a cease and desist from Christine, and he probably had to stop talking.
We kept calling her evil in the second season.
I mean, she is.
Well, that's his very dramatic nickname for her. He's like, I don't call her Christine.
Her name is not Christine.
I call her evil.
Her name is evil. And when evil tells you something, evil is going to get something.
You know, I discovered an interesting little anecdote about Christine and Michael. I discovered it on Reddit, on one of the Natalia Gray subreddit where the people are very passionate.
Yeah.
But there was one person who claimed that they worked for Christine at her daycare.
Sure.
Because Christine actually did run a daycare out of her house for many years.
Yes.
And this person claimed that this daycare was also somewhat abusive, and it was very bizarre. This person claimed that Christine's style of childcare is that they would take toddlers, zip them up into like these little sleeping bags, these little cocoons, and put them in high chairs. This person called it baby jail. And basically these kids would just sit there in these little cocoons for hours on end, right up until 5 p.m. when the parents would come to pick them up. Then they would unzip the children, let them out, and then the parents would be none the wiser.
Yes.
And what she said about Michael, this person who worked at the daycare, is that Michael would basically go up to his room. He'd kind of have his room, and he'd only come out every once in a while for to like get some food. He would barely talk to Christine. Anytime he talked to Christine, it would be to complain about something. And then they said that he looked very disheveled all the time, and that he would just hide from Christine basically all day long.
But it makes sense. And it tracks. I think that he was abused in the scenario, but he has a lot of he was a part of it entirely.
God,
for
yes.
sure.
He was number two.
God, yes.
He admits that he saw her beat him.
Yes.
Three times.
Multiple times. And he didn't
also,
do anything.
Did he ever have a job? I kept trying to clock that. Like, what was his employment situation?
A fun guy.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever at any point held down a job.
He had a job. I can't remember what it was.
Here we go. What did Natalia Grace's firm do for a living based on Michael Barnett's career? This is actually interesting.
I think he was a real estate guy.
Retail jobs.
Okay.
He was a team leader role to district manager roles for companies such as Circuit City and T-Mobile. He is absolutely a Circuit City manager.
Yes.
He is. Oh, wow.
And we know how good they did.
Wow. Yeah. That just came all the way back. That he is definitely a manager at a retail company.
Yeah.
He works as district director of operations for a financial company in Indiana. So I don't know what that is.
Okay. Yeah.
He does staffing and stuff. But yes, I could totally see him be a manager. Absolutely.
Live from your grave.
Hello, Ed Larson and Amber Nelson from The Brighter Side here to check in with you, see how you're doing.
Is your day more disappointing than a gas station sandwich?
Are you trying to put one foot in front of the other in a glue factory?
Did you try to throw your air fryer in the bathtub, but nothing happened because you were too lazy to plug it in first?
Then The Brighter Side podcast is for you!
Oh, yeah!
Each week, we take nasty, dookie, stupid, dumb,
stinky, no good, doo-doo factory,
boo,
caca-like topics, and try to find the brighter side. Hey, Amber, what's the brighter side of waking up chained to a bed in Russia?
At least they have free healthcare.
That's right! So start your weekend off right every Friday with The Brighter Side on The Last Podcast Network.
You beautiful babies.
Circling back to the re-aging thing. So they find a doctor that is able to say, is willing to say, like, this is, yes, I believe that this is an adult. And so they go to this judge, and this is what, so it's a judge named Gerald Zor.
Ah.
And
behold, Zor, Judge Zor.
And this judge didn't see Natalia, didn't bring Natalia in. He didn't meet anyone. He didn't even meet the Barnetts. They never even stepped into court. The Barnetts didn't take an oath to tell the truth. The Barnetts just submitted a petition with this doctor's note saying, like, this is an adult. And the judge said, okay, and just re-aged her from 18 to 22. And if you want to ask the question to so many things in this fucking case, when you ask, like, how did this happen? The answer is always Indiana.
Yeah.
This state almost fucking murdered me.
It is really weird, man.
As far as the government goes in Indiana, it's fucking god awful.
Well, this is just a, obviously there are tons of different people within these governmental systems, people that are better and worse at their jobs. This is just such an example of, I feel like, the only way I really put it is it feels like some kind of negligent laziness.
Yes.
Where no one really looked into this case. This all came about. I don't really know how they got to change somebody's age without their consent, unless they got her to sign the form. Maybe there's something in there. I don't know how that fucking
works. But if
you're
an 8-year-old,
I don't,
you can't sign paperwork.
But that's what they did. They basically got her to admit somebody. They just fucked her up.
It really
they
does seem
you could convince a child to say anything.
And now when she's legally an adult, they could do anything they want to her.
Yeah. After she's 22. I mean, it really does seem like the judge, like the paperwork came across his desk. He read through it. He went, that's weird.
Yeah, crazy.
And he just signed it and handed it off. And so all of a sudden, with the stroke of a pen, her birth date changed from 2003 to 1989.
And if that's not magic, I don't know what is. Like, legitimately. Like, this idea of now, we all have collectively agreed that you're an adult now.
Perception. I mean, so now the perception is, like, this person does, like, suddenly, like, this 9-year-old could go in and buy a case of beer.
Fucking cool-ass 9-year-olds. but it is difficult because
She can vote, you know, this shit, like, instantly.
So now they don't know what to do with Natalia Grace. So now they got her. They have won in this aspect. This was Christine Barnett won it because they've been trying to get her out. They couldn't figure out a way to do it without them being on the hook. So because Christine Barnett did not want things to come back to her for getting rid of this child, even though like it would have been it would have been utterly understandable and actually probably more people would have applauded you if you had come out being like, this is actually past my abilities. I'm going to admit that we want to put her in a place where she could be taken care of and watch over by people who know what they're doing. You would have been a fucking hero.
Yeah.
She decided that she thought that people would then think that she was bad at it.
Well, she was, it's speculated that she was afraid that people would think she was a bad person by saying that I can't take care of it because, you know, that she doesn't have what it takes. And it would be a black mark on her record. It would basically be just make her reputation, her Q score lower.
Yeah. And then now that they have re-aged her, they can kind of do whatever they want. So they move her to an apartment. They literally just drop her off at a place in an extremely bad neighborhood in the state of Indiana, where it's like you're just basically watching a child who has to kind of figure it out. And the one thing I'll say about Natalia Grace,
disabled child.
And on Natalia Grace, I'll say something, man. She fucking bowed up.
Yeah.
The fact that she figured out how to make it, like literally how to survive, is crazy.
It is. But the first neighborhood wasn't that bad.
It's not good.
It wasn't beautiful.
It wasn't beautiful, but it wasn't. The first neighborhood wasn't all that bad. It was like one of those apartment complexes where it's a bunch of like single story apartments, you know, maybe like 4 or 5 people live in there. And so she's 9 years old. She's just dropped into an apartment. And so she just starts going to other people's houses and just knocking on doors saying, hey, can I come in?
Can I have food? Can we hang out?
Yeah.
Like, I need stuff.
And she's been, as you said, Eddie, like, you know, a kid will say, do whatever you tell him to do. She's been told over and over and over and over again by Christine, you're 22. And Michael as well.
Yes.
Has also been telling her, you're 22.
This is how a 22-year-old acts. This is what a 22-year-old says. This is what you say when you're asked these questions. She coached her.
Yeah. She was absolutely coached.
Yes.
And so she starts just walking into people's houses.
But it's interesting because now you're legally an adult. So up to this point, she has been kind of accused of doing these kind of like fucked up kid things.
Yeah.
Accused of fucking with the neighbor's kids. Accused of fucking with her stepbrothers. Or accused of attacking people at school. And that's one thing when you're a kid. But now you're quote unquote an adult. So everything that you do now has to be looked at like you're an adult. She was playing with a local kid. People came and saw her rolling around the grass with this other kid. They've been told that all of the people that have met Natalia Grace have been told that that's a 22-year-old woman, that it just looks like a little kid. So you watch them, these two kids playing together, like in a field.
Yeah.
What would you do if a strange 22-year-old person that looked like a kid that wasn't a kid, but was like playing kind of not intimately, but literally like tickling and rolling around with another kid that age?
Well, something that would be inappropriate for a 22-year-old person to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying.
They said she was unbuckling his pants.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's doing, because now, again, it's coming from the view of being, oh, we're viewing this as a 22-year-old doing these things. Where it's like, no, it was a fellow 9-year-old that was doing stuff that was just literally like playing with another child and trying to fuck, having some kind of social network.
Well, I mean, not only that, but, you know, the unbuckling of the pants, all this points towards the child being sexually abused, because she also made...
If that's even real.
If that's even real, but I don't know. I mean, she made a lot of sexually inappropriate comments to her neighbors, a lot of sexually inappropriate jokes.
Yeah.
She did spend a brief period in... what they called a stress center, which was a fucking asylum.
Yeah, like it was the pictures they showed of it. It did not look friendly.
Looks terrifying.
It looked like Shutter Island.
Yeah,
yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, but it was also said that she was, you know, approaching sexual inappropriateness with some of the other patients, and then she was taken out of that center because of that. But that's the thing, is that that's the behavior that abused kids exhibit.
Yes.
A lot of abused kids exhibit, they call it precocious sexuality.
Yeah.
And it's almost proof that at some point, either before she came to the Barnetts or while she was with the Barnetts, she experienced some sort of sexual abuse at some point in her life. Almost certainly.
This is frown time. All of this is frowny.
Yeah,
things.
It's a very, and it's even frownier for the fucking documentary filmmakers to exploit all of that for 6 episodes.
Yes.
I have some questions about the insane asylum that just don't add up for me.
No, there's
as far as the documentary goes.
There's a lot of gaps.
Yeah, they left a lot of gaps. They were in and out of that shit in the first season and then don't mention it in the second.
Yeah. Because, like, first of all the phone calls from the nurses and shit, none of those people left their name. They're just random phone calls. It could have been literally anybody that they're talking to, and we have to take their word for it, mm-hmm. that they're actually talking to the nurses that work there. But I know that no nurse from, like, a fucking nursing home would even talk like that.
No.
You know, it's just like, who the fuck are these people?
Yeah.
It doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't add up at all. So it may even be that all that was bullshit. Who knows?
Who knows? This is the thing in this story.
Because you can't even trust the filmmakers in this fucking thing.
Everybody's all over the place and everybody's got a fucking agenda. Natalia Grace is just trying to tell her story. But also, I think that her memory is kind of jacked up because of all the things that happened to her. I also think that she's been through a fucking lot. I think that there's a lot. And it was traumatized deeply as a kid. And now you've got Michael Barnett, who is a legitimate, I don't know what you'd call him, you know, like he's
a narcissist.
And I would not let him fucking watch Wendy or Carmi, never mind have adult children.
You shouldn't be allowed to drive.
Yeah, he fucking creeps me out. And then you get Christine Barnett, who's an actual fucking literal monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, she found the perfect patsy, which is Michael, I feel like.
And or
she
developed was able to him.
Yes.
Developed him.
Yeah, and then abandoned him. Because after she was at the apartment for, I think it was a year that she was in.
We've gone
this,
for a while.
Yeah, it was quite a long time in this apartment by herself in a fairly nice neighborhood. You know, and she would go across the street to this other family who were like these two nice people that, you know, were just like, she was a problem because she was around all the time. And they thought that this is like, oh, this is a 22-year-old person who has no sense of boundaries whatsoever. And that's what most people thought about her, is like, oh, this is just a person who has no sense of boundaries.
Yeah.
Not knowing that they're dealing with a 9-year-old who's lonely.
Yes. And that's really because everyone thought it was quote unquote creepy. And this is where the creepy thing comes from, which is this idea of like, oh, you know, she did all this fucked up stuff. Oh, she's an evil orphan. And it's just like, no, she was just fucking not 22. She was a child. They also was fed this stuff that she was an orphan, fed that she was an evil 22-year-old, fed like she was told this. So you get it. It's easy to program a child.
Yeah. Not just that. Like, I think it's important to remember that she is in constant agonizing pain.
Yeah.
You know, yes. Like, and who knows, like, what medication she's on to make her think a certain way.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think she was given any medication.
You don't think so?
She wasn't taken care of. Like, she wasn't taken care of. They did the absolute bare minimum.
They only gave
her
one surgery, right? And she should have gotten dozens
of them.
Yeah. Yes. And then she fucking was sitting there and she couldn't move properly. She couldn't walk. Her feet were facing out.
Yeah.
You know, and she still is all fucked up, obviously.
She didn't even have the right shoes.
Yeah.
You know, to walk around. She needed a walker.
Needs specialty shoes. She specialty walk. Man, when they showed the steps she had to go up in order to get into that get into the apartment.
Well, that's the second apartment.
Yes, yeah. That was the second apartment.
The first apartment that she was in, after, you know, I think after the lease was up, they were like, we can't have her around anymore. She's made sexually inappropriate comments, and also the incident with the little boy. They're like, we can't have her around anymore. She can't live here anymore. So what they did is they found another apartment and they found another apartment further away.
Yes.
Like they took her to the town of Lafayette, which was like an hour's drive from where Christine and Michael actually lived. And they took her to Lafayette. And this was in Christine's words. They said, she said, it's a white trash town. No one's going to care. Yep. Like, we can just put her somewhere and no one's going to give a shit about her.
She was literally left there to die.
She was.
I've seen shit like this before. You're given no money. You're put in the house in the north with no electricity most of the time.
It is to kill you.
No phone. They wiped her contactless clean on her phone.
Yes.
They put her in a bad neighborhood on food stamps to survive a 9-year-old. They thought that she was going to get murdered.
Yeah. It's truly.
Or starve to death.
Truly fucked.
Or fall down the stairs.
I think they were counting on falling down the stairs because even in order to get to the apartment building. It was like kind of a cracker box, you know, a top on top duplex. She had to walk up these huge,
steep
cement stairs
just
to get to the building. And then she had to go to the second floor.
Yeah.
You know, and how's she going to carry groceries up there? I think they were counting on her falling down the stairs and dying.
That's what
they were counting on.
And then they moved to Canada. Well, Christine Barnett moved to Canada.
Yeah.
Because they found out Michael could not go as well, which seemed to be a part of her plan as well.
Her plan was to abandon Michael back in, or the plan was to keep Michael in America, to go away, leave his, without divorcing him. Eventually they did get divorced.
Oh yes, they got divorced.
But
yes.
Christine and Jacob and the other two kids went to Canada because Jacob had gotten into this special school where, you know, a school for geniuses, so on and so forth. And that's the other thing too, is that this entire time, like, Jacob was being forced to participate in the abuse of Natalia.
Oh, yes. He absolutely was.
I mean, because one of the things we didn't really talk about, because long before she was sent to the apartment, it was 2 years of intense physical abuse on the part of Christine Barnett, just beating her and forcing Jacob to do weird shit. Like, she would bring in Jacob, who was a, you know, a young, like, not necessarily prepubescent, but young teenager, I think, would bring him into Natalia's room and say, pee on her bed. Pee on her bed. She was bad. Pee on her bed. And would make him pee on the bed when he was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, the hot mic moment.
In the middle of the fucking documentary series, they basically have the kid confess to pushing him down the stairs. Or the Michael kind of says something with him.
Well, they've just finished an interview. And Michael and Jacob, the son,
kid is like next to tears during the entire interview too.
The entire interview. He's haunted by this. Absolutely haunted.
In his horrible little basement. Fucking, it's just like, it looks like there's mold on the walls.
Yeah.
Like, it is like, he's in a horrible situation. It's just like math problems written on whiteboards everywhere.
Yes.
It is like a weird living situation.
Yeah. Yes. He looks like, what's his name from Beautiful Mind down there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But he goes upstairs with Michael and the interview is supposedly over, but Jacob still has his microphone on. He's on a
hot
mic.
They set his ass up, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And from what it looks like to me, they saw the jinx.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we're going to keep, if I would believe them if they weren't filming him.
Yeah.
They were still, because he was up at the top of the stairs with the hot mic. They're like, hold. Point the camera at the stairs. If the camera wasn't pointed at the stairs and it was just a hot mic situation, I would almost think about maybe giving them a pass. But it's not. They knew what they were doing. They knew that both of them aren't bright. Yeah. Michael and Jacob. I mean, Jacob's a genius.
Jacob's a genius, but not socially.
Smart.
Yeah,
he's not street smart at all.
No.
You know, and so it's fucking, he like realizes that the moment he says it, and he like, you see him, he rips it out of his shirt. He's like distraught. I'm sure the kid's fucking horrified.
Yeah, well, I feel so bad for him.
Well, what he said is that, you know, he's like, well, we said that we weren't going to talk about the thing. And like, oh yeah, the stairs thing, the pushing down the stairs. Like, yeah, I told them I wasn't going to talk about that. And he's like, because I don't want to, you know, get a subpoena or anything. Well, you were a minor at the time.
Yeah.
So and then Jake goes like, oh no, my mic's on. Oh God, oh no.
Yeah.
Because what I mean, and you can extrapolate from that is that Christine at one point forced Jacob to push Natalia down the stairs.
And there's a lot of evidence of Christine Barnett doing this.
Yeah.
She forced Natalia to go on camera often and confess to crimes, quote unquote, things that she's done. The poisoning, putting the
Lysol
floor
in the coffee.
Cleaner in the coffee. She made her say that she did it. She did a lot of stuff. She put her on camera because Christine Barnett is evil.
Yeah.
She did the thing where she tried to set all this up, which is like, because it's wild. It's like truly like it's deception with a club, and she was doing it on purpose.
She was interrogating her own adopted child, seems like hourly.
Yeah.
You know, like it was insane. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she would get her on camera and say, like, admit that you have periods. Admit that you have periods. Tell me that you have periods, that you have a menstrual. And then eventually go, I have periods. Like it's fucking horrifying to watch.
It's horrifying.
But yeah, that's what they would say is like they would, that she would, was menstruating, you know, and she had pubic hair. And that's why that they knew that she was an adult when the whole time they had every knowledge that she would, they would, multiple doctors and dentists prove that she was a child.
Yes.
So they move her out to this apartment that's essentially a death trap for someone like her. And after, it seems like, you know, the timeline's a little fuzzy here, but it seems like after a couple of weeks, this other family who lives in the neighborhood, the Manns, notice her and immediately talk to her and immediately say, like, oh, this is a kid, because the Manns adopt a lot of kids.
Yes.
They have 5 kids of their own.
Well, I believe they're part of the Quiverful movement.
Are they?
I believe they are part of it.
What does that mean?
Well, just the idea of they are a Christian group that, man, they love to come.
Yeah.
It's about having as many children as humanly possible.
Yeah, it's okay. Having arrows in the gut, filling your quiver with arrows.
Yes.
You know, yeah, it's
creating your own society.
Yeah, creating your own society. It's like one of those like subtly violent things where it's, you know, it's saying like we need a Christian army. So breed your own army and have as many children as you possibly can.
Gotcha.
And so the Manns,
Satan should try it.
He's got enough to deal with.
So their name is Cynthia and Antoine Manns. They're an interesting couple. And Cynthia does seem like a genuinely caring person.
She does.
She does seem like a genuine person, that she truly loves kids, truly cares about kids. Antoine, I'm not quite so sure about. I don't like him either, but he's a pastor of some kind. I don't know what denomination. I feel like he made up his own denomination.
He sounds, it's interesting because he's present for all of these interviews inside of the documentary series.
Second season, he's present for all the interviews.
Well, not the last one.
Not the very last one, exactly.
Yeah, actually, probably because Michael wouldn't show up without him.
I wouldn't show up, motherfucker. He says one curse word and he starts screaming about God while they're trying to interview him.
I mean, that whole thing was it all feels very reality television. Once
it's
it
very
got to
reality
that point.
I mean, the second season, you can tell that they are turning the Natalia Grace story into a reality TV show.
Yes. And that's where you're like, that's what I'm trying to get in my world where I'm like, so this is HBO?
No.
This is what HBO? No, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's ID, but it's on the HBO fucking app.
Ah, no, and it's on like, Max. Max is not HBO.
Discovery has ruined HBO. I don't need to get into that.
Look at this
now.
Fucking shit where it's like, I am one because I forget. But that really is like, talk about like a, if you want to, like, that's a media thing where you start to watch this stuff. And I was like, I can't fucking believe that HBO would make something like this. And then I have to remember, they're not making something like this.
Yeah.
ID is making this.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you have to. I was thrown off by the bleeps.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought I was watching HBO.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where's the, I want to see that pubic hair. You know, like,
I didn't realize that it was ID until I think like the second season.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't until that, like the whole time I'm thinking it's HBO, which is, you know, kind of fucked up because it lends the whole thing like such an air of legitimacy.
Yeah.
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 Live from your grave.
So the Manns like take Natalia in. They're like, okay, you're getting out of that fucking apartment. We take you in. And they say that she's lived with them for like 10 years. They say she's a loving, happy person.
Yes.
No problems. They, you know, they adopt a lot of kids. She's always very good with all the other kids. Like, I mean, yeah, they say that, yeah, she has her problems, but
yeah,
she was an abused child, a neglected child.
Of course she has fucking problems.
Yeah, she's all jacked up.
Yeah, yeah. She can't really read. She can't really write. Or she couldn't at the time when they found, you know, when they fucking
she
saved
had no
her from the streets.
Almost no formal education.
None
but
whatsoever.
She speaks well.
Yeah, she could. Again, she had to.
Yeah.
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 She had to.
Yeah. She had to figure it out.
Yes.
But at the, I mean, and I'm not, it's, this isn't necessarily a spoiler, but, you know, at the end of season two, you know, you get a, like, and this is just more of the exploitative bullshit.
Yes.
The end of season two, like, they end season two with, you know, the Manns have finally adopted Natalia.
Even though she's an adult.
Even though she's an adult, which you can do. You know, you can adopt, you can adopt adults. But, you know, they adopt Natalia and they make it out to this very beautiful scene. You think this is how it's going to end. And then there's the twist.
Yes.
At the very end.
There's a little clip of the Manns talking about how they're done with Natalia Grace. She, would they say she's tweaked?
I've got the exact quote here is they end it, you know, the adoption ends and then you hear the boom.
It's been like 2 weeks, six months. After
It says, you know, 2 weeks after filming ended, producers received a call from the Manns. And the call, and they played the call, it was Antoine said, something ain't right with Natalia. This girl is tweaking. I feel like she's the enemy in the house. And she said to us, we have held her hostage, made us look like we're the enemy. She's done other things too, but this was a new low. Natalia does not have emotions for nothing but herself. We're done. We're done with her.
My feeling is the nature of it is the nature of the call is fairly staged.
Very performative.
It's very performative. And I think we are watching and obviously feeding into it a little bit, just being in our interest.
Yeah.
Watching it, talking, this is creating a third season of a reality television show. I have no idea how far Natalia Grace is involved with this. We know that she's profiting off the show, as she should.
Yeah.
Right. Does she make money?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're paying her money.
Michael, does he make money?
I imagine they're not paying him anything, or they might. He might have a day rate. But
I bet they pay him.
They have to pay him,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I bet.
I kept looking up. Like, are these people getting paid? I couldn't find shit.
I know that she's getting paid because now I guess the Manns, a part of what that was referring to. The statement is about they felt that the money from the show wasn't split with them. Whatever.
Where did you find that out?
Like another forum again. Okay, it's like another reading.
Like that's a forum. That's probably speculation.
Yes, yeah. It's all speculation.
That's the other thing. Like every article I found was like by the Sun or the Daily Mail, and it's like none of this is credible.
Well, this is what's hard. Is that like this is why a lot of times we cover stories that have been through like 9 other vetting processes so that when we get to it, we add the dubious. You know what I mean? We add the dubious. We add all the stuff.
Yeah.
We're like, stuff like this is it's so hard because number one, it's very emotional.
Yeah.
It's extremely emotional. People get tied up. We talk about the passion behind this. And two, it's like we don't really know what happened at the very center of the story. The things that we do know is the fact that she was a little girl when she was adopted and should have been treated as such. That is like the heart of this entire story, is that none of this would have happened if she was just treated like a child instead of having somebody do truly one of the, you could have left her at a fire station and it would have been less fucking devious than what Christine Barnett did.
You know, and like, even if she was, even if like Natalia was a little evil or whatever, as like an 8-year-old, it's an 8-year-old.
It's an 8-year-old.
8-year-olds do fucking evil shit sometimes and then they grow up and they wish they never did it.
She came in to survive a Ukrainian orphanage where they scared them to sleep every night. She might be upset. Yeah. She can barely walk. She's in constant pain. She is in surgery after surgery. Her hands don't work.
Yeah.
That was the other thing too. You know what showed me? Natalie fucking clued me. You were watching it last night and you were like, they say all the stuff about her hurting people and
like holding knives. And there's
the
whole
stuff.
Story of like her trying to pull Christine into an electric fence.
That was the most ridiculous, stupid fucking part of the goddamn show.
Pushing the kids in and then cuts to innocuous but interesting. Michael, this fucking guy, what a piece of work. He tries to go into a LeBron James like handshake chain. With Natalia, do you remember this?
Where he tries to like show her the snap. Ooh,
he does
stuff.
That. He like, you know, he's just like, he's like, no, you have to do it like this. And he goes like, you know, like slap, you got to click, you know, you snap your fingers and shit. She can't even fucking do it.
No,
of course not.
And you're like, all right, she doesn't have the hand strength.
Well, she says it herself.
To touch his hands. I know. But then, but partially you're like, there's that thing that the beginning of the documentary series put the little seed in being like, oh, is she kind of evil? Even if she, you know, but then you're like, no, she literally she couldn't do it. I just watched her not be able to do it.
And
she definitely can't do anything of physical force using her hands.
You watched her do that as a 22-year-old.
Yes.
And they're saying that all of this happened when she was 9.
Yes.
You know, it's like, I mean, and they talk about, you know, her showing up into their room with a knife. You know how you fix that? A fucking baby gate.
Well,
she's
have,
like a, she was like a
child lock.
She's like 2 feet tall.
There
it's even that at that point. It was like a foot and a half, 2 feet tall. Like, and she says that herself. She's like, look at me. She's like, what? Like, why are you're afraid of me?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
They also said that they talked about that they did diagnose her with reactive attachment disorder, which was, it's like this concept of you come from a place of no trust. You're an orphan. It happens a lot with orphans. According to this, it's a reactive detachment disorder develops because a child's basic needs for comfort and affection and nurturing weren't met. And like what that means is that like they sometimes act in fucked up ways and they do fucked up things. And one of those where it's like, I actually think is possible in a way of like they kind of floated. She just kind of would hide knives places out of a feeling of not being safe.
Maybe.
That's what I believe. Out of feeling of not being safe, you're doing something. You're hiding stuff just for the sake of protecting yourself.
Well, how the mom hit him, and just so the dad would find him, and she would be able to manipulate him.
They also talk about how adopted kids sometimes, you know, will hide food.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, as far as her being, you know, the neglect goes, and how badly that can really affect somebody. Ed, I know I've talked to Henry about this, but have you ever heard about the wire monkey?
No.
Story. There was a study that was done many years ago when they were still very cruel to animals, where they took a baby monkey, or a few baby monkeys, and they had two mama monkeys that they basically crafted. One mama monkey was very soft, made from like a very plushy substance, but the monkey would not get food if they went to soft monkey. The other mama monkey was made of wire.
Yeah,
It was cold. But that monkey, you'd get food if you were the baby monkey and you went to the wire monkey. Inevitably, every time, invariably, the monkey would go for the soft monkey. They would go for the soft, because the comfort to them, to the baby monkey, was more important than the food. And so it showed, and so they were able to kind of extrapolate from that, like, you know, that comfort, as far as primates go, like that is essential to our
developmental process.
That is nurture over nature.
You must have comfort. You must be loved. You must be held.
Babies must be held.
Yeah.
Babies must
skin
be held.
Skin.
You have to have, that has to happen because what it does is it destroys. If you don't have it, it destroys an essential social adaptive nature. Like, it's just how it is. It fucks you up. Yeah. And so they said right here, it is a common problem for kids that were, this is from Romanian orphanages, but it said it was a common problem from kids that were from a lot of Eastern European places. Yeah. I don't know why. Why are they bad to orphans? Is there just a thing that they just are not into it? I feel like there's got to be at least one good Ukrainian orphanage, right?
I guess so, but
there's got to be good ones. There's got to be Russian orphanage, right? Maybe.
The job don't pay shit. I'll tell you that right now. So you're kind of getting who you get, you know? And then it's like the really good people they run a really good orphanage, but there's still a lot of extra kids.
Yeah.
Especially in places that are like war-torn and going through constant civil war, like the Ukraine.
Well, I mean, when I was in a high school, I participated in CX debate. And what's funny is that I can't remember the subject at all. But I remember one of the things that we argued for was like, you know, Russian adoption. And we had we went through this whole thing. This is like 1999.
This is real sad. I'm reading about Russian orphanages right now. And it ain't, well, man, Muppet Babies shouldn't be there, man. This is not good.
But our whole point was that Russian orphanages are absolutely fucking awful. Eastern European, like former Soviet bloc orphanages are absolutely just, I mean, places of torture and despair.
Yeah.
Which that's a place, that's where Natalia Grace was coming from. But things about all this is that it all begs the question, why do we know about this? Like, why do we know that all this happened? And that's because in September of 2019, Michael and Christine were charged with multiple counts of neglecting a dependent for leaving Natalia in the apartment. Someone noticed. And so they were charged with 8 crimes, like neglect of a dependent causing bodily injury. But at the end of the day, the judge in this case did not allow the re-aging to be brought into evidence. They were not the prosecution was not allowed in any way whatsoever to talk about the fact that this was a 9-year-old that they dropped off. They just talked about this. So the entire trial, Michael's trial, Michael was first, Christine was second. They tried them separately. The entire trial, the prosecution had to go only on the fact that this was a 22-year-old. And I think the jury took an hour, maybe two, to come back with a verdict of not guilty for Michael. Just based on like, well, it's a 22-year-old. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do about
it? Exactly. Yeah. And these fucking judges stick up for each other. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's what I think. That's where I take from this. It's like, we don't want to be shown as, like, weak-minded and make mistakes. Well, and so they're going to fucking stick up for this other judge.
That's a good point.
I think that's a great point. I think that that is a massive issue. I think that they're like, this precedent has been set. And if we undo this, how many other people are going to come to undo this? Because it's understanding that we would have to do, like, how do you put it? That means that someone's, like, truly fucking with the trust the court puts on you to not lie to us about re-aging your child. But I also, like, how many people, I'm going to look this up, how many people a year are re-aged? Like, how often does that happen?
It doesn't seem like it's, I think it happens in adoption cases with Eastern European kids because oftentimes the age is wrong. But usually it's like a year, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
It's not fucking 12.
Yeah. And to go back on the judge thing, not to get too political or whatever, but we know that it's either, if it's a state case, then either the Pence probably appointed this judge because it's Indiana.
Interesting.
And if it's a federal case, Trump probably appointed this judge.
Well, I think
2019.
I think these are probably elected judges.
You think so?
I mean, I don't exactly know how Indiana works because a lot of judges are elected. And I don't know if you know this, but I know at least in Texas, like, you don't have to have a law degree to be elected to judge.
Whoa.
I'm
a judge now.
Like county judges, you know, shit like that. Like, you don't have to have a law degree. You just have to say, like, hey, I want to be a judge. And everyone goes like, yeah, I think he'd be pretty good at that.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, I like him. And so all of a sudden you've got this guy in there that has very little knowledge of the law, but he's there and he's making decisions that affect people's lives. But I think it probably has more to do is just, you know, this judge doesn't want to fuck with another judge. That's it. Like, another judge, like, he saw the judge, like, I can't really, like, maybe he probably fucking knew the guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, doesn't want to fuck with his job, doesn't want to fuck with the guy, and just fucking lets it go and doesn't allow the re-aging to be entered. So Michael gets off scot-free. And then after Michael gets off, the prosecution looked at Christine's case and decided, we can't win this shit. It's a waste of time. And the prosecutors aren't going to try a case unless they are 99% sure that they're going to win. They're not going to go forward with it.
Yes, and because to lose something like that would be a massive public loss.
Two in a row?
Yeah.
Yeah, to lose two in a row and to also, like, spend the time, spend the money, all of that to try this person. And so they just dismissed the charges against Christina a little less than a year ago in March of 2023.
And so she can't be tried again now, right?
No, she can be. I think
civilly. Probably.
I think they're going to go for the civil award because the state of statute of limitations for neglect of a disabled person had passed. That was one of the other reasons why they couldn't get Michael on those charges.
Yeah, but I think if you are tried for a crime and found not guilty, you can't be tried again. But if charges are dismissed against you, I think you can be. I think the charges can be brought back, like if there's new evidence. I'm pretty sure.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. But they're not. You know, it's not like they're just not going to go for it. They're not going to go after it. I think as far as the state of Indiana is concerned, this case is behind them. I don't think they fucking care.
But there's so much footage of her just abusing this child. We saw it in the documentary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's the thing. There's only footage of her there's footage of her emotionally abusing her.
Physically abusing. I mean, the wall thing is insane.
But there's no video evidence of that. And
that it lasted as long as they said it did.
Yeah. And there's no, you don't know. And it could also be argued that's just a, you know, that's a punishment that a parent is allowed to. I mean, hell, there's a lot of people that will defend beating your kids, you know, like still like we should bring spankings back. You know, like there's plenty of, especially like Indiana. Like, I know all our people in Indiana. I love
you.
Good people in Indiana. But goddamn, that state's awful.
It's just got a lot of problems. They just need a lot of help.
It's got a lot of problems.
I personally have people going through some crazy problems with the adoption process in Indiana.
Yes.
That's as far as I can talk about that. But like, I know firsthand there is some crazy problems with the adoption processes in Indiana.
Yeah. It is very interesting. I'm also looking more into re-aging. But like, I guess it does happen fairly often in international adoptions because they believe if you shave a couple of years off a child, it makes them more attractive.
Yeah. Albert Pujols.
Yes.
Who?
Albert Pujols, the great home run hitter. He came from the Dominican Republic, and like he came in, and they were like, he was like, oh, you know, I'm 16, I'm 18.
Yeah, of course.
But he was like clearly 20-something.
That's what, that's what Larry Fishburne did to get an Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. He was, yeah.
Mila Kunis.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So sometimes re-aging is good. That's what we've learned.
But where we are with this case now is like I don't believe that Michael or Christine, well, I mean Christine, her reputation is fucking ruined. Her life is over. Like
that,
you know, like
over.
I mean, she is forever Christine Barnett, the woman who, you know, tortured and re-aged a little person
and never
for years.
Gave fucking Jacob a dollar for the book.
Nothing.
Yeah. That sucks, too. Yeah.
That poor kid. I feel so bad for him, too.
I feel bad. I mean, he seems to be like the only genuine dude in this whole thing. Like, he seems like he's really trying hard to be a good person.
And I hope Natalia can find some peace. I hope that she gets, I hope she gets paid. There's going to be season 3 of this show.
Obviously.
And so we're going to end up watching that at some point. And you might notice, so this was like, this is a relaxed fit.
Yeah.
So this was a lighter episode. We're talking about some stuff, kind of, but I want you to know we got two absolutely thick ass series.
Huge series coming up.
Yes.
Can you give any hints?
Well, one is we got true crime.
Okay.
Big old true crime story. And then we are doing a really fun trip into stuff that this is a part of your education.
Thank you,
Eddie. We're going to teach you about what's really going on.
More alien shit.
No, it is not more alien stuff. It's the truth.
No, it's there's some alien stuff, but it's what's really going on under the surface.
Yeah, buddy. What goes on?
Yeah.
Who's making the decisions that affect us all? And I'll say sometimes there are people that need to sleep on a rock with a sun lamp.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you're speaking my language.
Very big series. But yeah, so you know, we're doing a run up to some really big thick stuff before we do our big histories. Because we got two big series and we got a big history series this summer that we're gonna do. I'm very excited for.
And the true crime series, what I'll say is that it's a modern story that of the last 10 years that has roots in the past, or I would say the motivation of the perpetrator has his motivations far in the past.
Okay.
Perhaps a war between two religions.
Ooh, I hate religion.
Yeah. And you're going to like this. You're going to like this.
Well, the nuns are number one now, by the way. Did you hear that?
The nuns are number one?
Yeah, the number one religion in America is nun.
Whoa, no zero.
None.
Yeah, we did it. No religion.
I thought you meant like
none as an N-U-N. I thought you meant
like nuns.
No, they're out.
Yeah, they're out there.
They're way out.
They're out there.
Have you ever seen a young nun? I have. My whole life, I've never seen one young nun.
You know, I've never seen a young nun.
No, I never have either.
We are going to see the end of nunnery.
It's very possible.
Yeah, we'll still have priests for a while, but yeah, we'll definitely see the end of nuns.
Yes.
Fuckers, man. Let the nuns be priests. That's the whole problem.
You know, man, you know what? That should keep them out.
No, just let them fuck. Just let everyone
fuck. Let everybody
fuck. That's the problem.
That would help out a lot.
Yeah, let the nuns be priests, but first let them fuck.
Yeah, everyone, they let them scissor. Let priests suck dick.
Yeah.
You know how many problems would be fixed if priests could just suck dick?
They do probably.
Legal
you don't
dick.
Think that the
Legal
Virgin
dick.
Mary,
you think
a Virgin Mary didn't suck dick?
Yeah, that's how do you think she got the name?
Yeah, buddy. Because she kept the holes empty.
Yeah. I don't know how I have
so they never said anything about virgin teeth.
The guy Angel came to the windows. I have a baby.
Gabe?
Yeah.
Gabe. That was
Gabe. Yeah.
You hungry? Let's make some food. Let's make it.
That guy shoots crazy ropes. What a sad episode. So next week, we got one that we're doing a last little special. And then once we're back, so 2 weeks from now, we're going to be having a big, big, big series. So you'll see.
Yeah. All right.
All right, fuckers.
Very big indeed. But yeah, don't forget to check out all our shows, all of our live streams at twitch.tv/LPNTV. All you out there who are Patreon subscribers, we got some really cool shit coming up. We're going to be adding some stuff to our Patreon here.
Yes.
Very soon, here within the next month. So if you're not a Patreon subscriber right now, you can go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft and check out to see what all you get for becoming a Patreon subscriber. And also know that there's going to be some extra shit in the future, especially for those of you who enjoy watching Last Stream on the Left.
We have a lot of stuff coming down the pipe. We have a lot of changes, and we've been kind of working behind the scenes a little bit, but you're going to be so, I think the word is overwhelmed with content.
Yeah.
Very soon. You're gonna cry yourself to sleep.
Yeah. And if you want to watch us do the podcast, you could check that out on Patreon as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's in there.
Last Stream on the Left. Or go to our YouTube page. They're always Last Stream on the Left is posted 2 days after it airs on Patreon. So you can go check it out early on Patreon and watch it live and interact with us as it happens every Tuesday at 6 p.m. PST.
Yep.
Or you can watch it for free on YouTube 2 days later.
So why don't you just go ahead and take yourself out of that shit? Hail Satan.
Oh, yeah, Gein.
Hail Jacob.
Yeah,
yeah. I like work. Jacob.
I like Jacob Natalia. I feel like also
Natalia's cool, but, you know, it's a little difficult.
It's hard.
Jacob is a pure soul. I feel so much for Jacob.
God. I really do. I feel a lot for Jacob. But yeah, yeah. And I also feel for Natalia too. So yeah, it's like, yes. I feel.
She is an abused child. There's no question about it.
Yeah, yeah. She's doing her best. That's what I'll say about Natalia. She's doing her best, and good on her for doing the best she can with a horrible fucking hand that she was dealt in life. And Jacob too.
Yes.
But everyone else, like, I don't know.
I got no good feelings for anyone else. I don't know nothing about the other kids.
Yeah, yeah, they purposely stay out of it as they should have.
Except for Cynthia Manns. I got a good feeling for Cynthia Manns.
I like Cynthia Manns.
I think Cynthia Manns is a genuinely good person who truly cares about kids. Antoine Manns, I don't know about that guy.
Yeah, he's manipulative.
I don't know about that guy at all.
Yeah, I don't know about him.
All right.
Bye!
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.